The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
To address the Epstein files, more than 500 attorneys and reviewers spent thousands of hours painstakingly reviewing millions of pages to comply with Congress's law. We've released more than 3 million pages, including 180,000 images, all to the public, while doing our very best in the time frame allotted by the legislation to protect victims.
You ask about the outrage in the U.S., and there is a lot of outrage, but, you know, what is really interesting contrast here has been how the fallout has been so different on both sides of the Atlantic. You know, in Europe, senior figures have resigned or been forced out. Peter Mandelson resigning from the Lords, and Jack Lang in France stepping down from the Arab World Institute. Senior diplomats in Norway and Slovakia. I mean, you were just reporting on Keir Starmer, you know, being on the ropes. He didn't even know Epstein. But in the United States, there have been very few consequences for the prominent officials whose names have surfaced. So there's a real disconnect between what is going on in Europe and the lack of consequences that these rich and powerful people are seeing in the United States.
Again, the victims are being completely lost in all of this. In every discussion,
the victims are asking Andrew to go and give evidence.
Yes, but what have the victims actually got? What has actually happened? Who's gone to prison? Who's been prosecuted?
They haven't got any justice yet, that's for sure.
How many people? Nothing. There's hundreds of people mentioned. How many of them have appeared before that inquiry? The only one is the same one who's in jail who said, I'm pleading the fifth.
Not many people have been held to account. I mean, I guess Jeffrey and the Maxwell gal, those two, I mean, the ones that were running this prostitution ring that went right around the world, that so many of the rich and powerful were helping themselves to. And who knows how much money was exchanging hands. It just, you know, it's almost like every other day you could concentrate on Ezekiel 8, where God says to the prophet, come and look again, look behind the wall, look at what's going on, look at all of these abominable practices. And it just gets like we've covered this week. It's almost been a theme for the shows this week. Just how awful and appalling and evil it really and truly is. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the final show of the week, which means, of course, we've got this week's installment of World Watch. We've also got that third installment of the Gadi Taub Assembly, which I'm not sure if I'll have time to get to today. So if it rolls over into Monday, you can wait for that patiently. But then a lot to get to on today's program as well. I was telling the students this morning just how much of a contrast there is in the content that I go through each day with my job, whether it's for this program and then I have the classes. I mean, here you're seeing all of this news over the Jeffrey Epstein empire, really. I mean, he was just a lowly, I think he was a math teacher, making hardly anything. And then how did he become a billionaire? What was he doing? What was he selling? To focus on the contrast, you do need to leave that aside and then immerse yourself into, as we were this morning in class, John 7, John 8, the greatest Feast of Tabernacles in history, the greatest Last Great Day observance in history, the sermon that Jesus gave on that day. And even for Christ, I mean, in John 8, he's preaching on the last great day. He's talking about being a light to this world, about bringing light to a world in darkness. And here these Pharisees, they haul in this adulteress. She was caught in the very act, and they knew right where to go to catch her. these hypocrites, guilty in most cases of the same sin. And you see how Christ dealt with that kind of sin. He said, go and sin no more. Well, first he exposed the hypocrisy. If you're without sin, if you're without the sin of adultery and fornication, then go ahead, throw the first stone. And they all filed out quietly, embarrassed, ashamed, exposed. And then he told the woman, stop sinning and follow me. Follow my example. Jesus never sinned. He kept the commandments of God perfectly. And by doing so, became our perfect example. And he's the one we follow. You can't just make everything right by a mere mention of Jesus, maybe in a song. You know, if you sing about Jesus, that doesn't erase the lifestyle that maybe has gone on for years and years and years. I mean, when was Jeffrey Epstein convicted of pedophilia, a sex offender? I think it was 2006, 2007. So we've got a full 20 years. I know he died in 2019, but what about all of those associations with the rich and the powerful between 2006 and 2019? This week we've talked about, well, just the culmination, the extreme radical transgenderism that wants to go and shoot up a school. But all of the sins and the evils that preceded that, the breakdown of the family, the curse of divorce, sexual deviance, viewing perversion online, watching, consuming entertainment with themes of violence and promiscuous sex. In a lot of ways, Jeffrey Epstein, his prostitution empire, I mean, that, like I said yesterday, that's downstream from generations and generations and generations of divorce, fatherlessness, sexual perversion, adultery, fornication. There's so many different angles that you could take from this story. I mean, the pedophilia is certainly at the top of the list. But then, too, I mean, what about all the girls that were of age, you know, above 18? Now, in the world's eyes, that makes it okay, okay? They made a lot of money from Epstein's empire. They're in their 20s. You know, they're traveling to Epstein Island for a few days, make some money. And then the billionaires, they travel there as well. What does it say about the sex trafficking or prostitution profession? It's quite popular. It's quite common. It's all over the world. Human beings have a huge appetite for it. And there's plenty of young women that are willing participants. They sell themselves for money. So they get money. And then the elites, they get the women or the boys, whatever it is. And then behind all of that, I mean, what about the family breakdown? You see in these Epstein files the cases of 14-year-olds, 12-year-olds. What happened to their families? Where's the father? You know, where's the father of the 21-year-old that would just go and sign on for this? And say, yeah, I'd kind of like to make a lot of money. I'd like to jet set around the world with the rich and the powerful. And then, of course, you have the victims that were forced to do it. We don't know. And then you've got the fake victims as well, the opportunists. The ones that are trying to get a quick buck on it from today, 20 years on. There's the politicization of it. People that are not interested in the story at all, when you've got Otto Penn in there, you know, the dear leader. And then when Trump gets in, now that's the most important thing. And you know, this story for Democrats, the story was very important when the Somali scandal was happening in Minnesota. Billions and billions of taxpayer dollars going to Somalia, of all places, because of rampant fraud. And then, as if right on cue, one Democrat after another crying out, Epstein, we've got to expose Epstein. And then the ones that go into it looking for Trump. The only thing they're interested in the millions of documents and videos and whatever else, is trying to establish a link to Donald Trump. You see that all over the place. Of course, there's lying, there's deceit. There's a lack of courage on the part of the Justice Department to go after anyone that's committed these crimes. You heard there in the cold open, Pam Bondi saying, we went through, okay, Congress passed a law and said release the documents. Well, the reason we redacted so much is we're trying to protect the victims. So there's lots of victims, but hardly any criminals because they won't prosecute them. There's no indictments. They created an indictment to try to take down Trump based on exaggerating property value, of all things. But they can't get enough evidence. They know there were 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds. Even Democrats have said this. They've gone down into the skiff. They've read the unredacted. They only have a couple hours to do it. Finding out all these seedy details. And then what does it say about the DOJ, who has all of the information, who has the remaining files that haven't been released? And then their unwilling. This is under a Trump administration. Their unwillingness to do anything about it, to punish the wicked, to punish the criminals, to punish the lawless. You mean they just get away with it? I guess so. The New York Times this morning, it says, in unsparing detail, the documents lay bare the once furtive activities of an unaccountable elite, largely made up of rich and powerful men from business, politics, academia, and show business. I mentioned the other day what Manchester said about the elites in the early 1900s. The elites in Britain, ones like Winston Churchill's parents, just living in adultery and getting STDs and all these things. I mean, they're rich, they're powerful. And coming out of the Victorian age, you would think that kind of thing wasn't going on, was it? Yeah, actually, there was a lot of it, especially among the ruling class. The head was sick, just like it is today. Look at the first century. Those Pharisees, they went away quietly because they were guilty. They were the ruling class. They were the elites. And Christ exposed them, the hypocrisy. What does God think of this kind of thing? These are the leaders of our society. This montage, I think it ends with, maybe not. I thought there was one that had some comments from Tucker in there. Maybe not. We'll go ahead and play clip 3.
One of the things that's been reported on a lot, of course, is the fallout regarding young women being trafficked. But another big revelation has been the scope of Epstein's connections, his contacts. Some people have described him as a collector of people.
Epstein and the former Prince Andrew kept a close relationship long after he was convicted in 2008. By the next morning, a photo had emerged of Andrew crouched on all fours over an unidentified woman. He has yet to comment on the latest release of documents, but has always denied any wrongdoing. On Sunday, Peter Mandelson was back in the spotlight. Documents revealed Epstein paid $75,000 into accounts linked to the former UK ambassador to the US between 2003 and 2004. He said he has no record or recollection of receiving the sums, and didn't know whether the documents were authentic. Police have now started searches of two of his properties. On Monday, emails, which appear to be from Sarah Ferguson, Andrew's ex-wife and former Duchess of York, illustrated the closeness of her relationship with Epstein, even whilst he was in prison. In one, she calls him the brother she always wished for.
We already knew that Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick had a relationship with Epstein, which he claims had ended in the early aughts. But new documents indicate that they made plans to meet for lunch in 2012 on Epstein's private island in the Caribbean, while Lutnick was also vacationing in the Caribbean elsewhere with his family. And it does seem in those documents like they followed up and had that lunch.
Torbjørn Jagland is a former prime minister and foreign minister and ex-chair of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, who is now under criminal investigation by Norway's White Collar Crimes Police. According to the Epstein files, he made plans to visit the infamous Epstein Island with his family in 2014. Mona Yule, who resigned as ambassador to Jordan and Iraq on Sunday, is now also facing a corruption probe, as is her husband, a former high-level diplomat. In a shocking twist, just 2 days before Epstein's death, the sex offender signed a will leaving the couple's children $10 million, and investigators want to know if it was a reward for professional favors.
And one individual with whom he had a particularly close relationship was former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak.
Bill and Hillary Clinton had said consistently...
They said consistently
they would not cooperate, and they've now changed their minds and have realised and decided that to not cooperate looks really bad.
You know, Epstein's... I saw this interview with Epstein's former girlfriend talking about how someone is a loser if they weren't mentioned in the Epstein files. It's a window into the elite impunity, this club. And by the way, I think this is the most vulnerable the British monarchy has ever been. I mean, I heard they were asking the Queen questions about the Epstein class. They ought to ask the King and Queen questions, and maybe this will be the end of the monarchy.
Well, Epstein had connections everywhere, from Norway to Poland to Australia.
Yes, Epstein was at the centre of it. His web spanned governments, royalty, finance, intelligence link circles in the US and the UK.
But the other reason that this story has force is that it sort of speaks to this kind of the interconnectedness of this global elite, where apparently the rules don't apply.
Everyone of power, it seems to be just complicit. Or weak and spineless, or unwilling to do something, unable to do something. So I don't know what the solution is.
But much more disturbing is not just that boomers are, you know, out of it, we knew that, but that young people are just like so basically have been made, let's just be honest, so decadent in their thinking that they're just like, yeah, of course, you know, like, of course we're ruled by satanic pedophiles. Like, how terrible is that, that people are growing up in this country just assuming that the most grotesque crimes are the way things are?
Decadent in our thinking. It's a good point. The New York Times piece talks about the Caligula-like antics of Jeffrey Epstein. It says, in the end, Epstein was arrested, charged with serious sex crimes, and died in prison while awaiting trial. His associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, also remains incarcerated still. That's far from a complete reckoning, says Marjorie Taylor Greene. We'll have some clips of her later. She noted that none of Mr. Epstein's male friends or associates had been imprisoned for their behavior. And now the administration is saying it's time to move on. Yeah, okay, we gave you all the redacted documents, or the documents with redactions. And now it's time to move on. President Trump, for his part, even called it a hoax. This vast network, as you saw in the montage, this prostitution ring, an empire, really. How do you go from a school teacher to a billionaire? Well, he was selling sex, a lot of it, to a lot of very rich and powerful people. And evidently, judging by what the FBI said earlier this week, there's no evidence of crimes. No evidence. CNN says here, Jeffrey Epstein was obsessed with building a harem. He was building a harem. All kinds of women. The day after meeting with Jeffrey in 2013, billionaire Richard Branson sent Epstein an email gushing about their time together. It was really nice seeing you yesterday. The boys in water sports can't stop speaking about it. Anytime you're in the area, would love to see you as long as you bring your harem. You know, bring the gals next time. Bring the ladies. The boys love it. So if technically speaking, there's no crimes there, I mean, does that make it okay in God's eyes? What does God think? Bring the harem, says the famous billionaire in the UK. Through Branson's email exchange, though Branson's email exchange has made headlines recently, it's hardly the only mention of a harem in the Epstein files. Epstein, it seems, was obsessed with the idea of building a harem, or at least what he imagined one to be. One of Epstein's victims told the FBI in 2019 that Epstein gave her books in English and Arabic and explained to her what a harem was, saying, "You'll be part of Babylon." And one of those congressmen said, "This is like a window." What did he say? A window into the elite immunity. I mean, they get away with it. They're too rich. They're too powerful. They're too big to fail. They're too big to come tumbling down. You'll be part of Babylon. Another victim reported that Epstein said he didn't believe in monogamy and that the idea was to build a harem. Well, and he had a lot of friends that loved it. Branson and a bunch of others. Says here in yet another FBI interview, an assistant for Epstein who said she was assaulted multiple times told investigators in 2019 of his ambitions to build a harem on his Virgin Islands property. PBS said the Epstein investigation began in 2005 when the parents of a 14-year-old girl reported that she had been molested in the millionaire's home in Palm Beach, Florida. Well, good for the parents to report it, to turn them in. But why was this 14-year-old girl going to this billionaire's mansion? Then Miami U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta struck a deal letting Epstein plead guilty to state charges of soliciting prostitution from an underage girl. Sentenced to 18 months in jail, Epstein was free by mid-2009. So it all started in 2005, and he was a sex offender, a registered sex offender. He was in prison for 18 months. This is 20 years ago. New York Post says one of Jeffrey Epstein's youngest victims was just 9 years of age, lawmakers revealed after viewing the Justice Department's cache of unredacted investigative files. 9 years of age. And so who's the perpetrator? Who's the pedophile? Is it just Jeffrey? Is Jeffrey the only one that's guilty or was guilty? You can read through these files and you read about 15-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls, 10-year-old girls, Raskin said. That's a Democrat, Raskin, in the House Judiciary Committee. I saw mention of a 9-year-old girl today, he said. I mean, this is just preposterous and scandalous. As I say, there's so many angles to this that are all disgusting. Even the fact that so many of the plebes would just conclude, well, that's just how the rulers are. That's just how the elites are. Just get used to it. It's normal, I guess. You've got a lot of people in these files, mentioned in these files, who are now saying, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know what was going on. I thought he was just a philanthropist. I thought he was just donating to good causes around the world. I just wanted to get a seat on his plane. 20 years ago. Registered as a sex offender. And really, they went light on him then. It was a plea bargain. What does it say about all of his associates who worked with him and spoke with him, interacted with him regularly since 2005, since 2006? I mean, in these files, Donald Trump, he called the sheriff in Palm Beach or somebody higher up and said, I'm glad you're finally going after Epstein. Everybody knew it. Everyone. The rich and powerful, they knew all about it. Now they come forward and say, they plead ignorance. Didn't know. I didn't know. What does your Bible say? This is 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. In the English Standard Version, it says, do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Don't be deceived. If you keep bad company, it's going to pull you down. It's going to lower your standards. You're going to compromise with sin. That's why God says to come out of this world, to stay away from it, to stay away from its influences. In fact, it says come out of Babylon. I mean, Jeffrey was just straight up. Hey, look, if you join the harem, you're part of Babylon. What a term to use. Don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. So here this one woman, she's an attorney, worked for Obama. I got the article later. There's something like 10,000 communications in these files between her and Epstein. So what does that say? I mean, you're in close contact with Jeffrey Epstein, constant contact. And then when it finally explodes, you say, boy, I sure am surprised. Can't believe this was going on. Don't be fooled by those who say such things, for bad company corrupts good character. That's the New Living Translation. The saying that maybe you're more familiar with, birds of a feather flock together. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein, it's not just about his prostitution ring empire. It's really a snapshot into this present evil world, as I was saying yesterday. We're getting a lot of snapshots. Proverbs 13:20, it says, he that walks with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. I mean, look at how many powerful people the regime media, excuse me, the regime media has tried to destroy with just one association of guilt. I mean, that's why the enemies of Trump went into the files just looking for Trump. Because if they can find Trump, then they can say, well, he's a pedophile. Ilhan Omar said that yesterday about Donald Trump. Called him a pedophile. Said in Somalia he'd be executed. I mean, all it takes for her, and I know she's a communist infiltrator, and she's trying to cover her own tracks. But all it takes for her is to see one mention, and Trump is guilty. Well, the fact is, Trump did have communications with Epstein. There was a falling out, at least. Most of his clients were Democrats. There's a few exceptions, Steve Bannon. But most of them were powerful Democrat donors. Bill Gates and the like. Says here, 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6, your glorying is not good. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? You just have a little pinch of leaven and it spreads. That's the way sin works. That's why we've got to remove it. That's why Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. Just remove it so you're not tempted. How many people were tempted by what Jeffrey Epstein had to offer? Maybe some did resist. I hope that everyone that went to that island didn't do what so many others did. But why would you go to the island, period? The Bible says you're not even to... It says in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22, to avoid even the appearance of evil. So if he's convicted as a sex offender, now again, if he went and sinned no more, he obviously didn't, but if he did that, then that's different. Jesus will work with anyone who repents, who changes, who turns around and starts walking in the direction of God. But if you're registered as a sex offender, you're engaged in sex trafficking, you've got these palatial estates all over the world, you've got the island, you've got the plane, who would want to associate with someone like that? Answer, a lot of very rich and powerful people. And they did it for 10, 15 years on, knowing full well what he was convicted of, what he was engaged in. A little bit of leaven. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 6, this is verse 14, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Don't try to force this companionship. Don't try to be unequally yoked. Doesn't work. It says, what concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believes with an infidel? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, verse 17, come out from among them and be separate. Separate yourself from the filth. Separate yourself from the profanity. Just don't go there. Shun it. Why weren't these powerful people shunning Jeffrey Epstein? Of course, you can't know every little thing that went on. The documents don't tell everything. And then, you know, another just disgusting component to this story is how many prosecutors avoid even going there because they think, well, some judge is going to turn a blind eye and let the guy off anyway. We don't have enough here to really make sure it's ironclad. A new system of justice is coming. Look at how easy it was, as I say, for them to go after Trump or to go after the January 6th protesters. But for the left-wing protesters, nobody goes after them. And then all those associated with Jeffrey Epstein, I guess that's fine. I'm not saying it's just a Democrat-Republican thing either. A lot of this shows just how we don't care about sex sins at all. We don't even consider it sin. I mean, maybe rape and pedophilia are, you know, a couple of exceptions, but even the way our world is cozying up to pedophilia and then just looking at, I read an article yesterday that had all the stats and figures. It was back in 2019 at the Trumpet website. Just the gargantuan appetite that humanity has for sexual activity with minors, with children. Sundance says over at Conservative Treehouse, well, one last scripture I'll give to you. What about Amos 3 and verse 3, where it says, can two walk together unless they're agreed? How many people were walking right in step with Epstein on his plane, at his island? You heard the one guy in that montage, you know, now he's in the Trump administration, took his family down to the Caribbean, and then he hopped over to the island for a while. Why? Why would you do that? Do you agree with Epstein's lifestyle? God doesn't agree with it. Former White House legal counsel fixer to Barack Obama. This was the dear leader's fixer. Oh, yes. And former personal lawyer, fixer of Susan Rice. Catherine Rumler was chief legal counsel for Goldman Sachs for about 6 years. Throughout those jobs and networked professional relationships, Rumler was also a personal friend and advisor to Jeffrey Epstein. Close companions. They were in agreement. Goldman Sachs top lawyer Rumler resigned on Thursday in the wake of the Justice Department's release of emails and other material that revealed her extensive relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the disgraced financier. He was a financier. That's how he became a billionaire. Ms. Rumler and representatives for Goldman said for years that she had a strictly professional relationship with Mr. Epstein, a convicted sex offender. It was just business. For years. Here's another angle to the story. Look at how much it's exposed, lying, and deceit. It's all over the place. And a lot of times the lying continues even when the evidence emerges. You know, but people are just, they're assuming that most people, there's a few outlets here and there, but they're assuming that most people are just going to, you know, say, I'm not going to wade through all these documents. This is just the way the ruling class operates. Get used to it. I mean, that reveals, as Tucker said, there's some decadence in our thinking. A snapshot into this present evil world. Miss Rumler was a counselor, confidant, and friend of Epstein, the documents showed. She advised him on how to respond to tough questions about his sex crimes, discussed her dating life, advised him on how to avoid unflattering media scrutiny. I mean, Steve Bannon did the same thing. And he's got a very popular conservative podcast. He was in the first term, Trump's first term, as an advisor. Didn't last that long, but still. I mean, he's working right up until Epstein is sent off to prison for the final time and then dies, you know, mysteriously. There's Bannon trying to do, producing a documentary to rehabilitate Epstein's reputation. You just need to rehabilitate it with a 2-hour feature. Hopefully they threw in the word Jesus. Hopefully there's a soundtrack with the word Jesus in it, and then everything's okay. Everything's fixed. The whole past apart from God is erased. As long as you sing about Jesus. That's what we've learned this week, right? Mr. Epstein, in turn, provided career advice on her move to Goldman, introduced her to well-known business people, showered her with gifts and spa treatments, high-end travel, and luxury items. In total, Ms. Rumler was mentioned in more than 10,000 of the documents released by the Justice Department. Strictly business. Yeah, I did have an association, but it was very professional. And then the documents come out. And she resigns. At least she resigned. Like you heard in the cold open, I mean, most people over here on this side of the Atlantic, there's no repercussions. I mean, they just carry on. And according to the FBI, there was no criminal activity. So case closed. Trump says move on. We've got to move on. This is at Al Jazeera. Of all places, United States congressman has revealed the names of 6 men in the Epstein files whose identities were blacked out when the records were released to the public, including American billionaire Leslie Wexner, who appears to have been labeled a co-conspirator by the FBI in 2019. So now we learn that it's not just the poor victims that are blacked out or redacted. It's also some prominent political officials. What? So we got to protect them as well? The cover-up. That's another angle, another disgusting angle to this story. All of this going on in 2005, and he goes off to prison for 18 months, and then he gets out, and he immediately starts the sex trafficking again. And then where are the authorities in Florida? Where are the feds to stop it? Not just send him to prison with a slap on the wrist for 18 months, but to actually stop the sin, the abominable practices. No, it just starts right back up. It says here, that means the survivor statement to the FBI naming rich and powerful men who went to Epstein's island, who went to his ranch, who went to his home, and raped and abused underage girls or saw underage girls being paraded. They were all hidden. They were all redacted. Why redact it? I mean, it's so easy, isn't it, to campaign on full transparency. I'm going to release those files. Oh, yes. You just wait until Republicans get control. And then we've got 100% transparency. Is that what happened? It says here, the new document showed, among other things, well, it just gives a listing of all these European diplomats and elites that were caught up in this sex ring. the sex trafficking, and who knows what else. And the reaction in Europe's been stronger than here in the States. What does that say about just being saturated, drenched in sin, sexual perversions? Listen to this from, this is Marjorie Taylor Greene on a podcast earlier this week explaining why Trump has worked so hard, President Trump, to keep these files under lock and key. Clip six.
And I got yelled at by the president over this. This is why he called me a traitor. He called me a traitor because I would not take my name off the discharge petition because I stood firmly and said, no, we are going to release the Epstein files. I'm standing with women who were raped as teenagers. I'm not standing with the government. I don't support the cover up of all of this stuff, whatever it may be. And the president got mad at me and he told me, and I've said this multiple times, he told me his friends would get hurt. And that's what he told me. And then we're seeing a continued slow walk and cover up of a lot of this information. And I know that is why. I firmly believe that that's why it is being covered up.
He said this is her side. I mean, she was in Congress for 5 years. And as she has been noting, going around on the circuit with these interviews, she was President Trump's strongest defender when he was at his lowest point. And I think she's pretty well right about that. But she wanted these documents released. And if what she's saying there is true, President Trump said, you know, no, I don't want them all released because it would hurt my friends. My friends! You see, there's connections. They're all connected in so many ways. But here, and we've seen this mindset. It goes beyond Jeffrey Epstein. There's other snapshots out there. Just invite everybody into the Board of Peace. Just sit down with Hamas. Just reach out to the mullahs. Talk to anybody. Sit down with anyone. I don't want to release all these files because, look, I've got some friends in high places. And they might be mad at me. So there's Bondi with all the 500 lawyers, and they're carefully looking through these millions of pages, and they're redacting a lot of information, and it's not just about the victims. The new document showed, among other things, that Norwegian Crown Princess Mette Marit, the 52-year-old wife of Crown Prince Haakon, borrowed an Epstein-owned property in Palm Beach, Florida, for several days in 2013. So that would be, I guess, 5-6 years after Epstein went to prison for being a sex offender. In an email exchange between Epstein and Mette Marit in 2012, he noted how he was in Paris on my wife hunt, but I prefer Scandinavians. She replied that the French capital was good for adultery, but Scandies or Scandinavians were better wife material. They're friends, you see. They're friends. They are in agreement. Two can't walk together unless they're in agreement. Emails indicate that, well, backing up, it says former Secretary General and ex-Prime Minister Thorbjørn Jagland had enjoyed this relationship as well. Emails indicate Jagland made plans to visit Epstein's island with his family in 2014. He wanted to go to the island. Mona Jewell, Norway's ex-ambassador to Jordan, who was involved in Israeli-Palestinian peace efforts in the 1990s, resigned over the weekend after reports said that Epstein left $10 million to Jewell's children in a will drawn up shortly before he died. Really close friend of the family. He gave $10 million to them. Jack Lang, former French culture minister, stepped down as head of the Arab World Institute in Paris over alleged past financial links to Epstein that prompted a tax investigation. They can go after him, I guess, for tax violations. Prime Minister Robert Fico's national security advisor, all these names I can't pronounce, resigned over past communications with Epstein, including text messages in which they discussed gorgeous girls. A former foreign minister and former president of the UN General Assembly. He said that he considered Epstein a valuable contact who was accepted by rich the rich and powerful in the U.S. That's how he excused it. Well, he's a prominent individual. He's powerful. So we've got to maintain that contact. This is from PBS on Steve Bannon, the conservative podcaster. The one-time advisor to Trump exchanged hundreds of friendly text messages with Epstein, some sent months before the financier's 2019 arrest and jailhouse suicide. The two discussed politics, travel, and a documentary Bannon was said to be planning that would help salvage Epstein's reputation. One 2018 exchange, for example, focused on Trump's threats at the time to oust Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. In a 2019 message, Bannon asked Epstein if he could supply his plane to pick him up in Rome. Can you send your plane over and pick me up? Epstein and Bannon also exchanged gossipy messages about Trump and his politics. It says a lot about individuals, doesn't it? The companions, the friends, who you associate with, who you travel with, who you visit, who you reach out to, who you stay in contact with, who you might stay in constant contact with. Listen again to MTG on that podcast, clip 7.
Look, Pam Bondi works directly for Donald Trump. She is not out there an independent attorney general. She can't just run out and do whatever she wants. She works at the pleasure and approval of the president of the United States. Everybody in the administration does. So does the FBI. They're under the very same pleasure and approval of the president of the United States. So when everyone's getting mad at Pam Bondi or everyone's getting, you can name anybody you want. The man at the top is Donald Trump. He's the president. And he's the one that was completely against releasing the files when we started fighting to get them released. He's the one that called it a Democrat hoax.
He's the president of the United States. That's Pam Bondi's boss. It's Kash Patel's boss. This was that Associated Press piece that we quoted from on Monday. The FBI pored over Jeffrey Epstein's bank records and emails, searched his homes, it spent years interviewing his victims and examining his connections to some of the world's most influential people. But while investigators collected ample proof that Epstein sexually abused underage girls, they found scant evidence the well-connected financier led a sex trafficking ring, serving powerful men. An Associated Press review of internal Justice Department records show. It's incredible. No crimes committed, except Jeffrey. Jeffrey's the pedophile. Jeffrey's the sex trafficker. Jeffrey dies mysteriously in a jail cell that was emptied out of the cellmate next to him just before it happened. It all falls on Jeffrey, and happy for the feds, happy for the Trump administration. Epstein's no longer here. Epstein's gone. Listen again to MTG. This is from clip 8.
Do I believe that this administration is going to provide justice for anything in the Epstein files? No, absolutely not, because the president told me that his friends would get hurt. So I have that to go on, and that was the president's words directly to me. So I don't think anything's going to happen. Are we going to see people resign and step down outside of people over and outside of the royal family? No, I don't think so.
So nothing gets done, in her opinion. And just judging by the recent history, I mean, here again, it happened. He was sent off to prison 20 years ago. And look at the wonderful relationships he had, even after he came out of prison, after making no changes. Because then they got him again in 2019. Then he went back to prison, and that's where he died. So the lifestyle, I mean, it just continued. And through that period, I mean, he had a lot of close friends with rich and powerful people, friendships with the ruling class, the elites. An examination of Epstein's financial records, including payments he made to entities linked to influential figures in academia, finance, and global diplomacy, found no connection to criminal activity. I mean, that's about the only thing that, you know, government officials take as a serious crime anymore. Something financial. I mean, if you evade taxes, you can be sure they're going to come after you. They want their tax money. But this, I mean, this. Listen, we've been in Sodom and Gomorrah for quite a few generations now. And so Jeffrey Epstein, as bad as it is, as horrific as it is, it really is the culmination of cozying up to filth and sin, sexual deviance, perversion, lust, and then the breakdown of the family, divorce, fatherlessness, child rearing upside down. Not, like I said on the show yesterday, so many parents just unable, incapable of saying no, of setting up any restraints whatsoever. It's easy to blame, you know, the transgender or the sex offender when the 14-year-old goes over there to spend some time in this mansion. But why, oh, why is the 14-year-old even there to begin with? Why, oh, why is it so alluring for 20-somethings to apply to work for Jeff and Jelaine? They're financiers. There's a lot of money in it. It's a great job. We can travel the world. And we can sell our bodies. As I said at the start, so many different angles to this story. And none of them are good. What a snapshot of our present evil world. We'll leave it there because we've got World Watch that we can finish with. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.
The Chinese Communist Party is dotting Africa's coasts with ports designed to expand China's military and naval reach. An analysis of satellite imagery published by The Telegraph on February 4th shows. The Chinese now exert their influence as builders, financiers, and operators at 78 ports in 32 African nations. Though branded as civilian, these ports are clearly intended to accommodate China's warships. Some are run by private Chinese companies, but under Chinese law, all Chinese firms are obligated to obey the Chinese Communist Party. Military analysts say the ports give China a constellation of prospective naval bases, enabling the nation to sustain warships along strategic maritime routes, including the Suez Canal. Many of the ports connect China to Africa's vast deposits of vital minerals and other resources via Chinese-made roads and rail. The Chinese also use this network to bring in close to 1 million barrels per day of African crude oil. The Bible warns that a global network of nations will soon emerge, with China as one of the lead countries. Its purpose will be to block the U.S. out of world trade. To understand the details of this prophesied alliance, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches the Development of a Massive Anti-American Trade Bloc. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz visited the Middle East from February 4th to 6th, discussing potential oil, gas, and arms deals with Middle Eastern leaders. Merz traveled to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. He was accompanied by the CEOs of German energy company Uniper and Diehl Defense, among others, and promised the governments of these nations reduced restrictions on German weapons exports. Germany has restricted these weapons in the past, stating that it does not want to support regimes involved in human rights violations and conflicts like the civil war in Yemen. Now it seems Germany is willing to overlook these concerns to build stronger partnerships. Germany's new focus on the Gulf states brings to light a mysterious prophesied alliance in Psalm 83 that is yet to be fulfilled. Europe's largest economy is building a new global alliance, and it includes Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states. To learn more about Europe's prophesied connection with these Middle Eastern nations, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury's article, A Mysterious Alliance. Prime Minister Sane Takaichi secured a supermajority in the lower house of Japan's legislature on February 8th. This victory in snap elections could empower the hawkish leader to officially end Japan's post-war political era and dramatically accelerate remilitarization. Takaichi's government has maintained popularity ratings of around 70% ever since coming into power in October. By calling the snap election, she aimed to transform her extraordinary approval ratings into more seats for her Liberal Democratic Party. The victory gave Takaichi's party a stunning 316 of 465 seats, marking the first time since World War II that any single party in Japan has held a two-thirds majority. Crucially, this supermajority allows her party to override rejections of bills in the upper house and to propose constitutional amendments. It gives Takaichi a mandate strong enough to make her militaristic vision for Japan a reality. Under Takaichi's leadership, Japan will hit its goal of spending 2% of GDP on defense next month, nearly 2 years ahead of what was already a tremendously ambitious schedule. To learn more about Japan's prophesied future, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Japan's March Toward Militarism. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.